Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Well, thank you so much for staying with us. So policymakers and doctors, health practitioners, pharmaceutical companies have been speaking about their concerns around health equity. I wanted to explore this a bit more because, as you can see, this country being named one of the most unequal countries in the world is dealing with quite a lot. And one of the things that we need to be talking about is obviously health equity, especially after what we saw with Trump withdrawing some of the HIV and AIDS, access to that medication for many of us in the continent, and especially South Africa being very, very affected. I want to hone in a little bit on health equity and what it means for us here and those who are trying to have these conversations and assist in their own way in trying to make sure that everybody has access to good, quality, affordable healthcare. On the line with us is Director of Market Access and Public Affairs at Novo Nordisk SA. This is Thabeng Leping. Thank you so much for making time for us. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Pamela. Thank you so much for having me, and it's a real pleasure to be here and also to be part of this important conversation tonight.
The issue of health equity is one that often comes in at a crisis point. We saw the conversation happen around COVID, where we were all complaining about how much, you know, the global south, particularly Africa, is being exploited, but is the one that's getting sort of the last end of the stick, the raw end of the stick. We hear now where countries, health practitioners, pharmaceutical companies are having a much more productive conversation about health equity. And maybe give me your sense of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, look, in a nutshell, health equity, you should know that this is not necessarily something that is coined by Novo Nordisk per se. This is essentially reflected in the UN and also in the WHO declarations as well. Mm. So what is it essentially, right? Health equity is achieved when everyone can attain their full potential for health and well-being. So simply said, that's how you would define health equity. So it speaks to social determinants of health in a broader definition, right, which speaks to the economic systems, the social infrastructure. It speaks to post-migration and displacement. It speaks to a whole lot of array of issues such as climate change, digitalization as well. So all of that is reflected in the United Nations and the WHO declaration. And so as a leading multinational organization, particularly in the diabetes space, we thought to basically build our own narrative in terms of what is health equity, particularly in the low and middle income countries. And so South Africa is a part of that in terms of the rollout of these initiatives.
It's important for us, and I know sometimes it's not something that's obvious, but in a society where people struggle to feed their families, you know, lifestyle diseases like diabetes, as you mentioned, we make these choices that are so poor because we just don't have the choice. So someone will make a decision to, I don't know, grab magwinya, for instance, for breakfast, because that's what's accessible. That's something that they can grab on the go, but essentially maybe a burden to their health. And we are not talking enough about how we can support communities who are obviously either struggling financially, socially, things are not okay, and supporting them also with these lifestyle diseases.
Look, Pamela, I mean, you said it in your intro as you were opening the show, right, that South Africa is one of the most, if not the most unequal society in the world. And so we can't shy away from these realities as a company as well. I mean, the stats speak for themselves, right? In South Africa alone, we've got over 4 million people living with type 2 diabetes, and this represents about 12% of the total adult population. And so diabetes, in fact, have surpassed TB as the second leading cause of death in South Africa. And this is quite alarming, right? And these are the stats that have been published by the University of Pretoria. Similarly with obesity, right? We've got in South Africa over half of all adults either being overweight or obese. And so if you think about this, this is about 23% overweight population, about 23% of obese population, according to the World Obesity Federation. And so given that, and given also the very socioeconomic issues that you highlight, we've got a number of initiatives that we've in fact started implementing, working with communities. One is close by here where we are, because we operate out of Sandton. And so it's always a good thing, you know, to work with communities around where you operate. And this is a flagship initiative that we've actually worked on with one of the clinics near here called River Park Clinic, where we've essentially worked with the HOD. They're looking after the diabetes clinic to make sure that we capacitate nurses, right, in terms of building those capabilities for them to be able to work with these patients who live with diabetes. In terms of our referral pathway in South Africa, you know that it starts off at a clinic in either a rural community or even in a peri-urban area such as a township. And so you make your way up to a central facility in terms of getting access to care. But one of the barriers we've seen is that, you know, in some of these rural communities, people aren't essentially able to access the care that they need at the right time. And so if we speak about health equity, we're essentially also talking about equitable access to care, right? So if we're going to create an environment where people are able to access care equitably, you've got to make sure that that happens along the entire referral pathway. So that being from the clinic all the way to a regional hospital, until such time that people need to, you know, access a central hospital or an academic facility. And so we've been working in partnership with these small clinics in the townships to make sure that the nurses have got the right skills and capabilities to be able to initiate treatments in these patients that they are able to identify early. Speaking on the point of socioeconomic issues as well, we've been working with communities also to start food gardens, for an example, because it is understandable, right, that, you know, you won't be able to take your chronic medicine, for an example, if you haven't eaten a decent meal. And that is our contribution to that, basically, to make sure that the patient are aware of what they are eating. But at the same time, the patients are able to also be introduced to active lifestyle as part of the education rollout that we are making in some of these facilities.
And we take some of this, what we would call education around health, for granted. You know, I've often found that you would find maybe near a construction site, the kinds of food that the workers would be provided for is what we would maybe in my traditional sense would have called sustainable food, you know, broto, papa, and like a liter of Coke, because you get a surge of sugar, a surge of energy. But in a sense, with better education, there is less understanding about the effects and how it sustains or doesn't sustain the body, actually, which obviously means that it's not actually helpful for someone who needs that level of strength and I suppose stamina for the day.
Right. I mean, we recently had a CKM summit in Cape Town about 2 weeks ago, right? So that was the cardio, kidney and metabolic disorders. And so we discussed that. We invited, HCPs, so that your healthcare professionals. We also invited policymakers at the same meeting so that we are all sitting under the one roof and really discussing how do we deal with the burden of these chronic and kidney and metabolic disorders in general. So pretty much discussing the NCD burden in South Africa, right? And you know, you raise issues of people eating dikota and basically eating unhealthy food, because for them it's sustenance, let alone, because healthy eating in this country is a very difficult and challenging topic to actually have, because if I have an option of eating a quarter and not eating at all, do you see that the difference or that decision making can be quite challenging for an individual who doesn't have much? And so those were the discussions in the panel discussion that we were having at the CKM summit in Cape Town. And I highlighted actually in that conversation. One of the projects that we are working with the city of Johannesburg, but then also working with Gauteng as a province as well. In fact, we've got a memorandum of understanding that we've signed on working together on partly these issues, right? Mm. Because you can't be talking about a burden of NCDs mm. without addressing obesity as a gatekeeper disease to these mm. NCDs, right? Mm. We've got beautiful policy frameworks in South Africa. We've got, for example, the National Strategic Plan on NCDs, yeah. right? That speaks about dealing with the four major NCDs as leading causes of death in South Africa. But then you've got also the NHI with something that the government wants to implement in South Africa in the future. But all of these things actually speak about wanting to make sure that we bridge the gap between the have and the have-nots, mm. making sure that every single citizen of this country is able to access relevant care and equitable care, you know, as at that. And so coming back to the socioeconomic issues that you bring up in terms of the eating and the, all of that, I mean, what we're doing at the moment with both Gauteng and the city of Johannesburg speaks to that, right? Mm. It's about, I mean, Omotswana Pimelo, you would know the saying, Lyojwa le salimetsi, right? Mm. And that's exactly what we're doing in the schools. We're basically working with kids between the ages of 6 and 13, right? Mm. Trying to introduce behavioral economics concepts, essentially, to make sure that we drive home the message around healthy eating.
Yeah.
Even if you've got little, you can still, eat healthy. Yeah. But it's also making, an excitement around eating from the ground up. Mm. So basically, they're making food gardens, a lifestyle concept, and making sure that kids actually enjoy eating from the ground up. And so we've got 20 schools around Soweto that we are going to be signing up these contracts with so that we can begin studying basically the nuances around healthy eating within this cohort of children around Johannesburg. And we're hoping that after 3 years, and you know, we would be able to take those learnings and apply those nationally, if that's possible.
So alongside that, there are major policy issues that I know that you're engaged with, and I want your indulgence on this one, because while we have, you know, we have things that are happening parallel to sometimes really great efforts. So government also feeds children in some schools. But to what extent are you influencing what goes into what they're feeding? Aligned with making sure that school children as a whole come out healthier, so that it's not a burden to this economy and obviously to the health system. And I'm curious, whether do we have a holistic view on all of this?
That's a tough one, right, Pamela? Because what part of the childhood obesity prevention initiative, which is the 20 schools that I'm talking about, where we're getting involved at a grassroots level, right, trying to make a change. And trying to make healthy living and active lifestyle, part of how people basically do their day to day. In so doing, we can't do it just alone as a company, yeah. Contracting with the actual school itself. And so this is where the private-public partnerships come in. Mm. So we've got government in there, hence we've got our memorandum of understanding signed between Gauteng and us, and also between COJ and us. Mm. But then moreover, we've got academic partners as well, such as your university is on board. We've got University of Pretoria on board as well, working with us through their YARD program. So that's youth in agriculture and rural development. And so we've got all these broad stakeholders that are a part of this coalition in terms of making sure that we get this thing right the first time. Yeah. One, when we had the kickoff meeting, right, I remember someone from the Department of Basic Education raising a point that for these schools where they've got a nutrition program, a school's nutrition program running, what they've been seeing is that what they sent as a menu that should be adhered to by the schools and what happens in practice are actually different. Two different things.
Sure.
And that is complicated by two major things, right? One is you can't really dictate to the parents what they pack lunch for their kids. That's number one.
Yeah.
Number two, you find that the school governing bodies as well have a
I've got my own little tuck shop. I'm in the school governing body and I've got my own little tuck shop. and I'm going to sell what I want to sell in the tuck shop. So, you know...
That's exactly what it is, yeah. But then also you've got those tuck shops or mini little people that sell outside the school premises. Yeah. And they sell very unhealthy things. So it's a very difficult thing to achieve this.
You came into the country to support with insulin pens. And I think that was fantastic because I think we're speaking about equity here. And the last I checked, I think it was coming in at $3 for a 30-day dosage. And while we know that, for instance, in our public hospitals in urban areas, that is so easy to get. You spoke a little bit about rural areas. How difficult is it for people really in far-flung areas to access this kind of healthcare that is now affordable, but maybe it's just so far away?
Thank you so much for this question, Pimelo. In terms of creating equitable access to insulin, I think we need to break this down into two separate, distinct areas, right? So when you speak about insulin, we've always had insulin in South Africa. Yes. Novo Nordisk in South Africa has always actually supplied for the last about 15 years or so, probably even more.
Mm-hmm.
We've been supplying human insulin to the South African government. But bear in mind, I'm saying to you, human insulin, right? Mm-hmm. So that is the little bit of an older generation type of insulin.
Yep.
And so what we are celebrating at the moment is the recent tender that's been awarded to us as a company in order to supply for the very first time insulin analogs, not in a vial, but actually in a pen. So this is the more modern insulin that we are supplying to everybody. So basically all the healthcare facilities in South Africa can gain access to it, because I think it's in excess of 9 million pens that have been awarded to us. And remember, this comes on the wake of a situation that we had about a year ago or so, where we had supply constraints and some patients, you know, unfortunately had to then be switched from using a pen device.
Yeah.
Aisle, but this is now how the situation has been corrected. So it's not more of the same. It's not moving someone from a human insulin vial to a pen device, but still getting human insulin. Actually, here it's a true cross-functional and very true private-public partnership on display, where we had to then inform the National Essential Medicines List Committee. They call themselves NEMLEC. So their responsibility basically is to look at products that are coming into the public sector from a safety and efficacy point of view. But moreover, they look at affordability. Can South Africa afford from the government fiscus these type of products that have been brought in? And so we pride ourselves as a company that we've been able to reduce the prices drastically, right? You spoke about the $3 thing earlier, but remember the $3 thing is a ceiling that Novo Nordisk has on the supply of human insulin. So that, as I said, the more older generation type of insulin. And so now we've discounted quite heavily the price of modern analogs that we are now supplying. We've begun supplying from June to the public sector, and all patients basically living with type 2 diabetes are able to access these insulin treatments at really affordable prices.
Well, look, it was absolutely, quite an eye-opening conversation. I really appreciate you making the time for us. And I think we should take this further. But thank you so much for making time for us this evening. That's Director of Market Access and Public Affairs at Novo Nordisk SA, Thabeng Leping, as we discuss health equity. And I think, as I said, it's a conversation I think we should be having more of.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.